From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. At first blush, the Utah bill that lowers the legal blood alcohol level to 0.05 seems absurdly restrictive. And maybe it is. It's certainly impractical. It wouldn't take much to get a person over that limit. And if you're a cop, it's hard to enforce. It could hurt bars and restaurants. And while Utah would be the first state in the country to go this low to 0.05, there are dozens and dozens of countries in the world that already have. France, Italy, Germany, Australia, Canada, none of these exactly known for their temperance, have the same limit. Today in the program, we're talking about the Utah bill, which the governor is still deciding if he'll sign. We'll talk about the players, the science, and the culture. There may be a unique cultural twist for Utah, of course. Join us after the news.
Hello, podcast listener. It's Elaine Clark, one of the producers for Radio West. You'll notice today's show is a little bit shorter than usual. It's because it's KUER Spring Fund Drive, so you're missing out on several minutes of appeal to support KUER, Radio West, and the podcast you're listening to. But you're savvy. You know how it works. KUER relies on your support to make this all possible. If you're already a sustainer, thank you. If not, you can join us for as little as $5 a month. Just go to our website, radiowest.org. And thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. How many of you have had a conversation lately about the legal blood alcohol limit in this state? Of course, a lot of people have been talking about it because Utah lawmakers passed a bill that would give the state the strictest DUI law in the country. It would lower the legal blood alcohol level to 0.05. Now, Governor Herbert has not yet signed it. Some think he probably will. But the bill has outraged a lot of people. They say it is ridiculously low, impossibly impractical, that it's going to hurt restaurants and bars, not to mention the state's reputation. But supporters say this legislation is not, in fact, some backward idea from a puritanical state. The fact is you can find the same low limit and even lower limits everywhere around the world. And if you really want to reduce fatalities on the roads, these supporters say these laws will work. So today in the program, we're talking about this bill, where it fits in the country and the rest of the world, and we're hoping to hear from you today. 801-585-WEST is the number, 801-585-9378, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Joining us on the program is Robert Gerke, a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. He's been writing about this issue, and he's back with us. Welcome back.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
And we have Benjamin Bombard with us here in this part of the studio this time. He's, of course, one of the producers for Radio West. And Benjamin, welcome to you.
Thank you, Doug.
We have asked Benjamin to look into some of the particulars about this law, how it fits, in particular, Utah, to the rest of the country. We'll get to that here in a moment. But Robert Gerke, get us started. How does this particular law fit in with liquor laws in this state? I mean, people already know that it's pretty restrictive. So give us a sense of where this fits.
Well, I think Utah many years ago was one of the first states in the country, I believe the first state in the country, to go from 0.1 to 0.08 for its blood alcohol level.
83, I think it was.
Yeah. And so, you know, we have sort of been on the vanguard of that movement to try to cut back on drunken driving. And so we've also seen sort of in the last couple of years a troubling increase in DUI fatalities. And so I think there is an effort to try to address that any way they can. The National Transportation Safety Board has, for the last several years, been recommending the states go to 0.05, but they haven't been able to get any traction. So they actually came and pushed this bill really hard at the legislature. And I think they saw this as an opportunity for them to, you know, get that first one, you know, first one down, that, you know, then they can go to other states and say, well, look, you're not weird. Utah's already done this. And maybe at some point, you know, get some data to try to validate the claims that they're making about how this would reduce drunk driving deaths and accidents and crashes. So I think that's what sort of was the genesis of this. It did sort of fit in with the liquor reform discussion in some way that they were having during the legislature this year. Norm Thurston pushed this pretty hard. The law enforcement community was ambivalent about it. They've kind of said that we don't really know how we're going to enforce this because we can't tell really if somebody's at 0.05. And so if, you know, you have to be weaving for them to stop you. After they stop you, they do the field tests. And if you're not, if they can't pick up impairment at that point, it's hard for them to actually enforce this. But, you know, they went ahead with it. The legislative fiscal analyst estimated, I think, 912 people a year would be picked up in this new 0.05 to 0.08 window. And so, you know, it could have some impacts. The NTSB has said as many as 11% reduction in auto fatalities as a result of this. I think those numbers are inflated. I think they're relying on studies from the European countries, Australian countries that you mentioned. And Utah doesn't have those same rates of drinking. So you're not going to see the same reduction that you're going to see in those states. And when we're talking about these fatalities, the most recent data we've been able to find was from 2013, and there were six fatalities that were in that 0.0 to 0.79 window. So you're addressing those six instances to some degree. We don't really know exactly to what degree it's going to actually have an impact.
How much of the... how much of this was because there were efforts in the legislature to reform liquor laws? Like the Zion curtain thing that's been changed a little bit. So do lawmakers feel an impulse to overcorrect? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I think not only did they move separately, I think that the 0.05 sort of jeopardized the other liquor reform in some instances. Restaurants and bars were willing to go along with what they were talking about removing the Zion curtain, but they didn't like this other piece of it that was moving along the way. Late in the session, it looked like this bill was not going to make it through the Senate. There was actually opposition coming from House leadership that didn't necessarily like this bill. It had already passed the House, but they had some problems with it, and it looked like it might get bottled up in the Senate. Senator Adams said that he was going to push it ahead, and there was concern at that point, frankly, from Representative Wilson that it might jeopardize what he was trying to do with the Zion Curtain
Thurston.
Bill. From Representative Wilson, who was sponsoring the Zion Curtain Bill, that Representative Thurston's bill might actually jeopardize that. But Senator Adams pushed ahead with it. It passed the Senate, and you know, now we're waiting for the governor to make his decision on it. It's been interesting because the governor said the other day that his calls against this are running about 10-1, in opposition to it. There's been a big push, obviously, from the restaurant and the bars and you know, people who actually drink occasionally. And then there's also recently the Utah Shooting Sports Council came out against this, which is an interesting dynamic because they said that now under this law, anybody who's over 0.05 would not be allowed to have a firearm. And they recognize that this threshold is very low. And so that could jeopardize a lot of people's gun rights as a consequence
of
this.
Wow, that's an interesting twist.
It's one that never got really much attention or discussion during the debate on this, you know. So there are sort of now coming out of the woodwork some unintended consequences that I think maybe give the governor a little bit of cover if he did want to veto this, but I still think it's pretty likely that he'll sign it.
Well, Representative Thurston did say we're not going to implement this until 2018, and on the day that people drink the most. We should just point that out, New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, yeah.
But... So
2019,
forgive me.
The very end of 2018.
Exactly. And so the point being that he wants to sort of phase in, get people used to the idea, is that the general sense of it?
Yeah, I think they recognize that it's going to take some adjustment for bars and restaurants and drinkers. It's going to take some adjustment for police to try to figure out how they're going to do this. And so I think and it gives them a session. You know, they can come back next legislative session if they need to make adjustments to it. And I think that's really one of the things that it gives the governor cover when he comes time to decide whether he's going to sign this or not. Now, you could also argue that, well, they could also come back next year and actually pass a bill that's functional. And you know, that would be another way to approach it. But I think that it does give them a window where they can actually start implementing this and start figuring out what the practical effects are going to be.
I want to talk about the resistance to this idea because I think you have to put it in the context of this place, which might be culturally distinctive because of the Mormon population. You have a group of people who drink socially and have come to believe that they've been made to feel like they're doing something immoral and unsafe. And so do you think that part of the resistance to – so that you take the science of it and all those particulars – that this makes it more, this cultural resistance to it may be obscuring some of the facts that go on in the conversation.
No, I think that's true. I think I've heard from a lot of my friends who are drinkers who say that they feel like this is being imposed on them. It's another way for the predominant faith in this state to try to get at them and try to make them feel like they're evil. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and anywhere else in the country, this, you know, drinking is socially acceptable. Here, there's a stigma attached to it. And this is yet another way for the predominant religion. Although I will say the church has not taken a position for or against this bill, but it's perceived that way, as you mentioned.
And they need to?
Does the church need to?
Yeah.
They didn't need to. No, I mean, this thing kind of moved on its own weight, I think. And so, it generated its own momentum. I don't think they had to really push it very, very hard. So, but it is just sort of another way. You know, we've already got these issues where it's difficult to get a drink. We've got the Zion Curtain. We've got the low strength beer. We're cracking down on where you can display alcohol. It's just seen as another brick in the wall that these people who do drink socially are feeling like they're having imposed upon them.
Okay, there have been a number of experiments. Senator Jim DeBacchus did one. You did one, Robert Gerke, where you tested to see just how much it would take to get you to 0.05.
Yeah.
Set this up for us, how you did this experiment. How scientific could you be?
Well, I wouldn't claim to be, you know, totally scientific, but I do think we did try to put in some controls on it. There were two things that I wanted to find out. One is, you know, as I mentioned, and as you mentioned at the outset, people are like, well, what is 0.05? What does that feel like? What, you know, how many drinks is that? So that's the first thing we wanted to measure, and that was a lot easier. The second thing we wanted to measure is we brought in a police officer. His name's Chris Bertram. He's 25 years on the force, and he's retired now. And we brought him in to do field sobriety tests as we were drinking. And so to discern whether the police can actually tell if somebody's beyond 0.05 and when they fall into that window and when they actually start being impaired, because that's what the field sobriety test is supposed to measure for.
Right.
So we had men and women, different, you know, both genders drinking beer, wine, and hard liquor. Utah pours 3-2 beer, so we were controlling for that. And we started drinking, and we started sort of metabolizing this, and we'd do the field sobriety test, and then we'd blow into the breathalyzer and see where we were versus where the field sobriety test. And what we found was that after about 2 drinks, the women were at the 0.05 level. In the span,
like glasses of wine,
yeah, two beers, 2 glasses of wine, you know, in the span of about an hour, a little bit over an hour.
Okay.
The men, after about 3 drinks in the span of about an hour and a half, were also about 0.05. But we were also passing the field sobriety test. Nobody at 0.05 was failing a field sobriety. Although I will say I did fail one at 0.03.
I read about that.
But I passed it at 0.11. So, you know, you can kind of gauge how sort of subjective these tests end up being.
But isn't that what the finding that you found is that these can be maddeningly subjective and difficult?
Entirely subjective. Yeah. It's entirely up to the police officer who, you know, and sometimes they see what they want to see, and sometimes, you know, and I think that opens up a whole other can of worms. You know, you're making this more subjective now when you lower it to 0.05 to where the officer can say, well, I think I saw your eyes move, you know, or I think that, you know, you smell like alcohol, so obviously you're drunk, you know, and you're basing it on other things that aren't supposed to be allowed. Or, as the ACLU argued recently, and I think persuasively, it opens the door for things like racial profiling. You know, if you happen to be a minority or who gets stopped, are you more likely to fail a field sobriety test and have to blow than you are if you are me, a white male in Utah, you know?
All right, I want to Benjamin Bombard, I want to bring you into this part of the conversation. One of the cases made by Representative Norman Thurston, who sponsored the bill, is that this is not just a, you know, provincial Utah thing, that other countries, he says more than 100 other countries have the same limit in their laws on alcohol use, and in fact some go lower than that. You've been digging into this. Give us – just start broadly. What did you find? Where does Utah fit with the rest of the world?
I guess I would first jump off of what Robert was saying. It is difficult to find an analog to Utah. So I was doing the best I could to find something that was a cultural analog to the United States broadly. And what I quickly found is that two countries that seem to me to fit that bill that have a similar blood alcohol content limit, though with some provisos there, are Canada and Australia.
And 0.05.
Yes, 0.05, mm-hmm. Correct. So that would be the new Utah limit. And there, it's a little different. In both of these places, 0.05 to 0.08 is to 0.79 are administrative infractions.
So they're not criminally charged.
Exactly.
But they're punished in some other way.
Yes, they can take your license. They can fine you. In Australia, they can take your license for several weeks to several months. The same in Canada as well.
Yeah. And I'll just jump in
here.
Yeah,
please.
That's actually one of the things that there's already discussion about, is trying to make it a tiered enforcement to the point in Utah, to the point where it's not, you know.
Is that being considered here?
There's been some discussion of that. And the 0.08, you know, a DUI is a serious thing. We're talking tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah. It can change people's lives, make it an hard form to get to work, things like that. But, you know, so there is talk about putting another tier in there, giving prosecutors some discretion in how they charge these.
Okay. I want to come to a question hold on. I want to actually mention, Ben, go through some of these, if you will, because some of the other countries and where they are, this is surprising. I mean, if you look at the Scandinavian countries, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, they're even lower than 0.05.
Yeah, I believe Finland is 0.05. Sweden and Norway
are 0.02. Are 0.02. Oh, 0.02.
Yes, 0.02. Correct. Yeah. And Sweden put that law into effect in 1990, so quite a long time ago. And I found one study looking at that change, and they found a reduction across the board in traffic fatalities and DUI fatalities. That should be kind of taken in context with what happened at the time in Sweden. There were some economic conditions that may have reduced the number of young drivers on the road, which could also reduce that number. But I also think that this was something that Utah people who drink in Utah kind of balked at when they heard Norm Thurston's throw out the number. You know, there are over 100 countries in the world that have this similar level. People are thinking the Swedens, the Norways, places where
they have public transportation.
They have better public transportation. You can walk to the community bar.
That was what everybody brings up. And I'm hearing that a lot. Well, you can't compare Utah to whatever, because they can take a bus home and, you know, but that, you can't apply that same logic to Canada
or Australia
or a lot of different places. So it only goes so far, it seems.
I think so. We have similar per capita vehicle rates to Canada and Australia. Large countries with vast swaths of land that you have to drive frequently to get to the place you need to go. And perhaps we'll talk about it a little bit, but when British Columbia, which was the first province in Canada to institute this new 0.05 regulation, put their law into effect, that gave them some problems. That was 2010 that they put that law into effect, and it didn't work out exactly as they planned right off the bat.
It took some adjusting.
It took some adjustments. I spoke with a gentleman from the British Columbia Restaurant and Food Service Association that said when that law went into effect, they didn't have the Ubers and the Lyfts and a great public transportation system. And that law went into effect rather quickly. It was a matter of months. They passed it in the spring. It went into effect in the fall. And it really did, this gentleman told me, have a chilling effect on people going out and drinking. They didn't go to the restaurants. They were afraid to go to the bars for fear that they might be caught with a 0.05 on the way home. They also didn't have great public transportation to do that. One could argue whether Utah fits that bill or not. There are more alternatives now than there were in British Columbia at the time. But the gentleman also told me that it had a negative effect on especially destination bars, bars that people had to drive to frequent. It makes me think of the garage on Beck Street, which if you ever drive by the garage—
You're not going to walk there.
No. There are like 80 cars out there parked up and down
the
road.
Yeah. Robert, how do you respond to this? I mean, so 0.05, France, Germany, Ireland, Italy, Spain, Switzerland, Austria, Belgium,
South Africa.
What do you say to that?
So I think those countries, several of those countries do have higher rates of consumption than Utah does, and
that's an important distinction.
I think that's an important distinction because when we're talking about this is one of the things that's bothered me about this bill from the get-go is we haven't defined what the problem is. Are we having a rash of 0.05? You know, or above vehicle accidents and crashes and fatalities. And they haven't really defined that. They talk about 11% reduction in DUI deaths. That's possible. That's a little bit higher than I think we saw in the Australian study. I think it was at about 8%. But again, they have a higher rate of alcohol consumption. And so it is, as I mentioned, pretty much unenforceable by law enforcement. And so what you end up with is sort of it does send a message to people who might drink, who might drink, that, you know, you don't get in the car. You know, there's not a lot of wiggle room for you there, and it's hard to tell if you're 0.05, so don't drive. And that's probably what several of the people who voted for the bill told me, is that it did send a strong message that we're not going to tolerate it. But in terms of the practical impact in reducing these accidents and reducing these deaths, it's kind of hard to see that it's going to have a dramatic impact. I mean, even at 11%, we have about 30 DUI deaths a year. So you're talking maybe two, you know, maybe three, if that 11% actually holds. And again, like I said, I don't think it will. Once we start seeing some data from this,
Yes.
Well, I just want to jump in on that. I think jumping again to something that you mentioned earlier, Robert, that the NTSB may be hoping that they can tip over Utah's domino first in hopes that other dominoes may fall.
That's clearly.
And I think it makes sense to come to Utah. We were the first to pass the reduction from 0.1 to 0.08, as Robert mentioned, in 1983. While it may be true, I think, Robert, that we may not see much of a reduction in deaths here in Utah as a result of this law, if they can get this domino to follow and then another 49 afterwards, right, like they did in 2000 by federally mandating it, that the evidence that the studies that I came across seem to show rather conclusively that a 0.05 level will result in fewer traffic fatalities across the board, not just drunk driving fatalities, but you reduce drunk driving fatalities, drunk driving accidents, everything falls. All the other numbers regarding traffic fatalities.
Two quick
fall.
Points I want to make on that. And I think you kind of touched on this at the outset, Doug, but they instead of going to the places where this is a problem, they picked Utah where they could get it, where it was politically feasible. And so I think that's kind of what precipitated this. And I think the other thing that this also points to is that, it is part of the national discussion now. And Utah is sort of now the poster child for this. And so I guess we'll just kind of have to see if the political dominoes, as you put it, kind of do fall into place. I think it remains to be seen. But if these other states look at it and see that it doesn't have the practical impacts that Utah does, or that they said it would in Utah, then maybe they'd be less likely to do it. I think the other thing that is kind of interesting is, you know, we talk a lot about worrying about saving people's lives on the road, but you're also three times more likely to die from an accident related to speeding, or, you know, cell phone usage is a common cause of accidents. And we're not really targeting those things that it could actually make a more significant reduction and make our roads significantly safer.
I want to end with that. I want to, in fact, get to that point, because this is something you write, Robert Gerke, in your column, which came out today. Mm-hmm. You said there's nothing mystical about 0.05 or 0.08 for that matter. Here's what you write. Unless we make the legal limit zero, policymakers are drawing a line somewhere in that gray area, weighing how much risk we as a society are willing to accept. So it seems like the question here is, how far are you willing to go to impinge on personal freedom? I mean, there is cell phone driving, but drinking a cup of coffee when you're driving is a form of impairment. Changing the radio station, shifting a manual drive is impairing, all of those things. So what's the limit? How far are you willing to go?
Yeah, and I think, and I'm want to be clear, I'm not arguing that people should be drinking and driving.
No, no.
Impairment starts after the first drink. NTSB says that all the time. Impairment starts after the first drink. There is some measurable impairment at 0.05 and more so at 0.08. And frankly, most of the accidents we see occur, you know, well above 0.08. And the traffic stops we see typically are 0.14. So that's where the real problem is. But yeah, I mean, you're more likely to die from a gunshot than a traffic accident in Utah. But we certainly aren't doing anything to restrict gun access in the state. That would be blasphemy. And so, you know, you do have this sort of this, you know, you're trying to gauge this. Older drivers and younger drivers are much more likely to be in fatal accidents than a drunk driver. And so, you know, where are we focusing our efforts to try to make our roads safer? Well, we're kind of focusing it on the margins here with these, again, six accidents under the 0.79 in 2013 that were fatal, as opposed to 200, I believe, that involved speed. No, I'm sorry, but I think it was about 150 that involved speed. So, you know, where are we putting our efforts and what are we trying to do to actually make the roads safer?
I'm way late for a break.
Sorry.
Robert Gerke, columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune, thank you very much
for being with us.
And Benjamin Bombard, thanks.
Thank you, Doug.
We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Earlier this month, Utah lawmakers passed a bill that would give the state the strictest DUI law in the country. Utah was the first to lower the legal blood alcohol limit from 0.1 to 0.08. This was back in 1983. The new law, if the governor decides to sign it, it's unclear whether he will lower that limit even further to 0.05. Now, supporters say doing this is going to reduce drunk driving. It'll save lives. But opponents worry the law is going to hurt restaurants and bars, the state's reputation, and that it's impractical to enforce. Joining us now on the program is Jim DeBacchus. He's a Democrat in the state Senate. He represents the state's 2nd District. And, Senator, welcome back. Thanks for
being with us. Love being here, Doug.
We also have Bella Din Czar, the acting chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board, joining us from her office in Washington, D.C. And, Chairman Din Czar, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Doug.
I want to begin with you, Senator DeBacchus. Give us just your basic the context for this bill. Utah decides in 1983 to lead the way, and now they're wanting to lead the way to limit it further. What was your general sense of how that – just quickly, how it played out?
Well, this isn't a fair fight. I mean, Dr. Din Czar is the head of the National Safety Transportation Board, and me, you know, I'm going through 550 bills here and doing the best I can. So, you know, I was a little disappointed that we didn't get Representative Thurston or something. It could be a fair fight. So I just want to get
you can hold your own.
I think you're more than a match for me.
Anyway, I just wanted to make that clear. Look, I understand where the National Safety Transportation Board is. They want zero fatalities, and we're all there. And nobody wants DUI and the rest. The big question facing us now is, should Utah be the first state to try this grand, glorious social experiment? Because despite what they say, Europe and Australia and the rest, America is different. Nobody's done it. And the NTSB said do this in 2012. No state has been guppy enough to go along with this until we caught the Utah legislature in a moment of terrific weakness, and it passed through. And the consequences for so many elements of our society are draconian, and we need to have taken time and looked at all the unintended consequences. This is a grand, social, horrendous experiment, and Utah ought not to be leading the way in alcohol experiments.
Chairman, I'm going to get to you here in just a quick second, but on that point, I want to take a call from Senator Jake Andreg, a Republican representing District 13.
Hello?
Yes, Senator, welcome to you. Thanks for calling in. I know you have a point about how the process played out for you, at least your perception of it. Senator, are you with us?
Hello?
Senator, can you hear us? Apparently not. Let's see if we can fix that. I can hear his windshield wipers. It's raining out there.
Is that what he's? I thought he was bathing in the Great Salt Lake.
We'll try to come back to that. Chairman, let me just ask you, just broadly speaking, what is the problem you're trying to fix?
Well, thank you, Doug. And first I should say that, you know, I think Senator Baucus, he makes a good point. He has many, many different bills to consider. But this is the one that will truly save lives, and there's evidence behind it. I have hundreds of accidents to consider on airplanes, trains, ships, as well as on the roads. But I thought this was so, so important because in Utah, you truly have a chance to use an evidence-based tool in order to save lives in your state. And really, that's what it's all about, is simply this is people's lives we're talking about. It's not some game. It's not some joke, as I've seen some ads in the paper. It's really people's lives, people who are going to be killed or injured in an alcohol-involved crash. And that's simply the reason that we recommended this to all 50 states, not just Utah.
You've heard the question of why it is that you chose Utah as one. I know you didn't pick and choose how these went, but why would Utah be one of a good choice for this? Utah is distinctly different culturally. Something like half of the state doesn't, in fact, drink. So why is Utah really good to test this case?
Well, you know, Doug, I've actually talked to many different states, and they're all getting information from me. You know, it's great that Utah is smart enough to have advanced this through the state capitol. But really, I've been talking to all states about this. And Utah, it passed through the House. It passed through the Senate. It's awaiting the governor's signature. I think that the important thing to remember is Utahns, the majority of Utahns and the majority of Americans, 63% in a nationwide survey, that included all states, including Utah, want a 0.05. So it's life-saving. We've proven it with the evidence, study after study. And people actually want this. So it's unfortunate that there is some misinformation out there and that there's a lot of myths out there. But we just need to bring it back to plain and simple. It's about saving lives. If we want to do this, 0.05 is, in a way, a magic number, 0.05 or lower. And 0.05 is a place where we start seeing a significant increase in the number of fatal crashes.
Senator, do you want to offer some dispute to that point?
Yeah, I do. I agree there's misinformation, but a lot of it came from Representative Thurston, a lot of misinformation. We had 257 death fatalities. Imagine how bad that is. 38 of them are alcohol-related. This is from 2015. Out of those, 77% were people who were 1.2 or above. That is huge. Three quarters of them are people who are totally looped. And you know what? You want to go after them? Do whatever we want to do. I'm there. That's where the lives are going to be saved because that's where the problem is. In Utah, less than 1% of the total fatalities were people who tested at that 0.05. This is not the issue. This is not where the lives are going to be saved. Even if you say out of those 38 fatalities, 6% of them were at the 0.5 to 0.8, so we could save those lives, but that's not how the statistics are done. That just says what is the blood alcohol level of those casualties. So we don't know because there are so many other factors. You are at a higher risk of distracted driving if you have less sleep, if you're driving at night, if you're old, if you're young, if you're driving with emotion, if you're having a conversation. Those things get you a higher distraction than the 0.5. So there is no evidence. This is misinformation that somehow lives are going to be saved. We don't know that.
Chairman, respond to that, if you would.
Well, you know, I deeply respect any person who serves the public good, and I'm sure the senator has the well-being of Utahns at heart. But unfortunately, he is misinformed. There are hundreds of studies done by independent organizations, including the National Institutes of Health, including universities such as the University of Utah, including world-renowned authorities on on driving while drinking, and they've all shown that a .05 would, in fact, save lives. I think that the important point is the senator mentioned that, well, there's only a few people who die in Utah between 0.05 and 0.08. Right. And that's true, and we should save those lives, and they will be saved with this law. But even more importantly, 0.05 is actually a broad prevention measure. They call it broad deterrent, because people with a high BAC, they also will stop driving after they've been drinking. And aren't we trying to stop those high BAC drivers from getting on the road? The psychology has shown it to be true that at a 0.05 BAC law, people at all levels of BAC will stop, will reduce their level of driving. And that's what this law is about. It's about driving. I know that we've been saying these are alcohol laws, but essentially this is a driving law, and we want to stop driving at all levels. As the senator mentioned, there are other risky driving behaviors, and we should stop those as well. I mean, you know, in a way, this isn't some kind of Sophie's Choice where we have to choose whose life out of the 60 families, more than 60 families who will lose a loved one due to alcohol-related driving this year in Utah. So it's actually 60 people at least who will die in a impaired driving crash. So
we're not going to save those lives with a 0.5. I mean, that's
Senator,
the misinformation here.
It's been shown over and over. There are hundreds of studies, which I know you've seen, and it, you know, I actually understand it's hard to change routines, and it's hard to get people to realize that, you know, to have a 0.05 is necessary. But the same arguments happened at 0.08 and at 0.10. It's hard to accept new modern ideas and technology, even when we have the hard evidence. I mean, not so long ago, people didn't know that.
I just disagree. The hard evidence is there.
But Senator,
now we know that 0.05 will save lives, just as we know distracted driving, as you mentioned, is bad. But we can choose to stop both, and we should.
Senator, what do you make of the fact, and we had this conversation earlier, that as Representative Thurston pointed out several times during the debate, it's not just Utah that's doing this. He mentioned, and I'll go through those in Europe that we talked about earlier, Norway and Denmark and Finland and France and Germany and Ireland and Italy and Spain and Switzerland. And the list goes on and on and on. Why is that not an argument? Why is that not a legitimate argument for him to say, Utah, look, others, these are smart people. They've figured this out. And it's not just because you can take a subway home. There are other places like in Canada and Australia that have the same kind of driving culture as the United States, or certainly the Western United States. So how are you responding to that question?
Well, you can't just select certain cultural values out of a country, out of Europe, for example, or even Australia or Canada, and say, we're going to take this part and not take that part. They start drinking at most of those European countries at 16. Are we ready to do that? They also have neighborhood bars all over the place. So can you imagine in Sandy and West Jordan, lots and lots of neighborhood bars where people could go and walk? That's what happens in Britain. That's part of the culture as well. The DABC, no way, no how, no where. Just like I would say, why don't we take the European gun laws and bring them in? Can you? I'm sure the legislature would rally around that. They have so many less murders. And why don't we just hack their culture into here? It's not that easy. There are many, many factors. And I go back again and again and again to the state of Utah, because that's what we're talking about. Not some initiative from Washington, D.C. that they've been trying to get a guppy state to go along with. It is not an issue in the state of Utah. Look at the facts. Look at the statistics. 38 people dead, DUI. And there's no scientific connection whatsoever. It's a grand experiment between those 6% that happen to be there at that 0.5. And so if we want to go back and put texting and all of those other distractions that are higher than the 0.5 and give them draconian things like tripling their insurance and taking away their cars and doing the right thing, then we might want to think about it. But people at 0.05 are not drunk, and they ought not to get a DUI.
Chairman, I wanted to ask you about you can respond to that if you like. I wanted to ask about one of the things that you're seeing in other countries, Australia in particular, I believe in Canada as well, that as opposed to – so they have the, they've imposed 0.05 as being the legal limit, but they don't treat it the same way they do as 0.08. It's a tiered charge. It's different. It's not treated as a criminal charge, although it has some consequences. Where are you on that point?
Well, thank you, Doug. I think that's an important issue to address, and I would like to address the senator's comments as well after that. But you're talking about administrative license revocation or administrative penalties.
Yeah.
And those are also effective. So as the NTSB, we're not some type of government bureaucracy out there to tell you what to do. All we do is investigate terribly tragic accidents. And after that, we make safety recommendations that we hope states will take if they want to have an effect on these tragedies and preventing these tragedies. And that's why we recommended this, not targeting Utah specifically, but addressing all 50 states. And administrative sanctions do work. Different countries have a 0.05 or lower, in fact, and up to 0.02 because that's where the margin of error starts coming into play with the testing. But at those different lower 0.05 or lower levels, any type of sanction has been shown to work. We're still looking at which ones are more effective, but we leave that up to the state. It's not up to us to decide how you will implement a safety recommendation, just to recommend it and give you the scientific evidence that it will save lives and a certain amount of lives in your state. And speaking of number of lives saved, I know the senator has a 30 number, but actually it's actually more than 60 people who will lose their lives related to alcohol impaired driving in Utah every year. And that,
you know, doctor, you used that in the testimony, and I asked the Utah Highway Safety Council for the numbers, the exact number for the last year that we have.
Let's not quibble. I mean,
No. It's important because it's a big difference between the 60 you were using and the 38 that are the reality.
Go ahead, Chairman.
Yes. So the numbers are that whether it's 30 or whether it's 60, but it is 60, there are many people who are losing their lives on Utah roads every year related to alcohol. And if we can save even, you know, a few of those lives with a simple stroke of a pen, I think it's worth it. But at 0.05, the science has shown, and this is from the Centers for Disease Control as well as universities, at 0.05, I know many people say that someone is not impaired, but you have reduced coordination. You can't visually track moving objects. You have difficulty steering. You have a poor response to emergency driving conditions, all things which are very important. So no matter how you get to 0.05, whether that's two drinks or three drinks, I think it's clear from laboratory evidence that there is an effect on your driving.
Senator, let me take a call. Sure. I wanted to get to Senator Andrig of calling from Lehigh this morning. I hope I get him this time. Let's try this again. Senator, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate it. I was one that voted against the bill, mainly because it practically is going to be exceedingly difficult to enforce. But in addition to that, since the legislation passed and the session is over, I have new concerns. Come to find out after the fact that the House leadership had told all the lobbyists that this bill was not going to be prioritized and sent over to the Senate when it wasn't going to be heard on the Senate floor. So they called off the dogs. They ultimately stopped lobbying us on the Senate side. And so I didn't feel like that their voice was adequately heard on the Senate side. I didn't know any of that when the bill came up and it was voted on. So I think procedurally, we didn't get a chance to really vet this thing the way that it needs to be. This is a significant policy shift. I mean, we didn't even discuss things like how does this affect, this new law affect dram shop? How does this affect, you know, the liability associated when someone gets a drink at a restaurant and then goes down the street and kills someone? I mean, dram shop law is a significant component of this. We haven't addressed any of that. So I think the lobbyists didn't get a fair shake on the Senate side. I'm not sure why. I don't know what the process was. I know the bill came up, it was voted on, and it went through the process. But I don't think all the voices were adequately heard on the Senate side. So I'm urging the governor to veto the bill, even though I personally believe that no one knows if they're at a 0.8 or a 0.5 or, you know, any blood alcohol level. It's whether or not they're impaired. I think law enforcement is doing a good job. Personally, if we're going to head this route, let's say not a drop at all. But I think the process didn't work out properly, and I think it wasn't fair. I would like to see us maybe come back to this next year and have everybody at the table. I don't think that happened in this go-around.
Chairman, do you want to weigh in on a legislative procedural question? I'm not sure how much you want to say about the way this bill was passed, but I want to give you a chance if you do.
Thank you, Doug. No, we leave that to the states. All I can say is I feel like this bill had lots of publicity, probably the most publicity of many places that I've ever seen, because there was such, you know, there was a lot of debate, which is good, which is what it should be done in Utah. But I think that you know, anyone who would say that they weren't contacted, with all due respect, I think this bill had intensive publicity and as well as lobbying, and unfortunately misinformation given, I think, to the restaurants and tourism industries by certain lobbying arms. So I felt that there was plenty of information being given. Unfortunately, much of it was incorrect, and I hope it doesn't cost lives.
Senator Andrig, we're glad you called. Thanks very much.
Hey, Jake. Bye-bye. Good talking to you.
Senator DeBakis, do you want to weigh in on
Jake
that
part? Jake Andrig is as conservative a guy as there is in the Utah Senate. He represents Lehigh. And it was a lousy, miserable process. It may have seemed like a lot to our good guest who came into Utah for a day and there was falderall. Big, major policy changes. This was snuck through like a thief in the night. It was not vetted. It was not done. And one other thing. We have a law right now to deal with those impaired people that cover people from the 0.5 to the 0.8. What this would do, and it's, I'm not a lawyer, but it would make the pro se, which means you're automatically guilty no matter what else comes along, it would lower it from the 0.8 to 0.5. That is a draconian change. It would take away that flexibility that every prosecutor in the state uses when they feel as if somebody is a little bit, but there's an ability to argue the case. This would take that away and put that woman with one glass of wine. She is drunk. She's going to get a DUI. She's going to be facing insurance issues for 10 years. It's a draconian thing, and it's focused on the wrong darn people.
We're essentially out of time, but I want to give the chairman the final word on this. Final thing to say, Chairman Dinzar? We may have lost her.
Somebody said, maybe.
I'm sorry about that. But let me just say, Bella Dinzar is the acting chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board, joined us from her office in Washington, D.C. And Senator DeBakis is a Democrat in the state Senate. He represents the 2nd District. Thanks for coming in.
Give everybody. It's pledge drive time. Give, 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 give.
Glad
doesn't
you made your
work
pitch.
Without that.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Technical direction from Tim Slover today. David Boyle is our intern. The program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.